wait for the automatic door closer to close. Second case for oral argument this morning is Simon Torres Appellant versus State of South Dakota Appellee. For the appellant, we have Mr. Kevin Lewis, an attorney from Rapid City. And for the appellee, State of South Dakota, we have Ms. Ann Meyer, Assistant Attorney General from Pierre. The court would also like to welcome members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Appreciate your attendance. Hope you find the proceedings of interest to you. With that, Mr. Lewis, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Chief Justice, Justices, Madam Clerk, Ms. Meyer, members of the law clerk, and the audience, good morning. This case involves, I think, the reason, one of the big reasons we're here is because technology is moving faster than our rules of evidence. We have, in this case, also involves a shooting at one of the biggest basketball tournaments in South Dakota. That's held in Rapid City every December, the Lakota Nation Invitational. At that tournament, Mr. Torres was convicted of shooting Mr. Bordeaux at that tournament outside the Civic Center. It surfaced a while later that there was a video taken of this incident, a video by a cell phone. A young man who was a basketball player from one of the schools that was participating, who testified he went outside and pulled out his video camera because a fight was going to happen and he wanted to get it on video. Well, it turned out to be more than he expected. And he had this video, about a 30-second video of the incident. And since it was taken with a cell phone, it's designed to be shown on small screen, not necessarily a big screen. And as when law enforcement received it, they had to make changes to it to blow it up so it could be seen on a screen in a TV, on a TV in a courtroom for a jury.
What changes did they have to make to
do
that?
They ran it through, a forensic computer that basically takes... It makes it larger, and then it adds pixels, which are points, I think. I'm not that up on that technology, and I apologize. But it just adds extra pixels to make it visible on a larger screen.
But it didn't change the substance of the video?
No, not that. That didn't.
Okay.
No, that change did not. What change was made to it was testified by the forensic computer person for Rapid City Police Department, Dave Stuckey. He testified that when looking through this, watching this video several times, he couldn't tell who the shooter was. And then finally, after talking to detectives and such, he got information as to who the shooter was and who they believed the shooter was. And then he watched it again and then put in identifiers. The identifiers said, shooter, victim.
Was your client's face visible in this?
No.
So what are they pointing to?
They're pointing to the individual, the person standing there that with an arm out that was supposedly shooting.
What would be the difference between doing that and having a photograph, an actual photograph on the board, and the state, in its case, writing on the photograph a box saying victim and a box saying shooter? What would be the difference?
Well, because one, the video is a real-time depiction of what happened, and the jury has to decide what happened.
But the jury had to make that decision here because they were shown the original video as well.
Correct. But
so they had to decide whether the state's theory that this identifier was the victim and this one was the shooter. The jury had to make that decision. They had both the original and the comparison.
They did. It had both, but the comparison is changed because in the comparison, you're identifying the players as the state sees the players. They're, you know, it's like, I would liken it to instant replay in a football game on a sideline catch.
How do they identify the arm with the gun? Did they say Torres? Did they say defendant? Or did they say shooter?
I believe they said shooter.
So that doesn't necessarily mean it's your client.
That is correct. It wouldn't say Torres. But the thing about it is everyone who testified, who watched the video, couldn't tell who the shooter was or thought the shooter was someone else. The kid who took the video took it back to Flannery Indian School and watched it with his friends, and then later on some counselor discovered that they had it and was turned over to law enforcement. When he was watching with his friends, they thought someone else was the shooter. And then you have the testimony as to the different people, you know, what the shooter was wearing. There was some differences of opinion as to what the shooter was wearing. Was he wearing a hoodie, a black hoodie with silver dragon on it? Was he wearing just a straight black hoodie? You know, all that came into play. And then by putting this in here, and then these people saying, well, that's Simon Torres and he's shooting, that tainted the jury's position.
Doesn't that video then become demonstrative evidence? And the second part of that question is, isn't that an abuse of discretion standard by the trial judge? Are you saying that what we have to do is say the trial judge abused its discretion in allowing that?
Yes. I mean, it is an abuse of discretion standard in this particular case.
It's a pretty high burden.
I know it is a high burden, but that's what the law says. And I can't sit here and dance around it as that's not the standard.
How then did it unduly prejudice your client by having the police identify this arm and this gun as shooter?
Because then you have other people saying, well, that's the shooter and that's Simon Torres. And instead of the other people saying, well, he may have done this, but then the video may have showed someone else, and that would have been reasonable doubt.
But there's no question the victim was shot, right?
No, there is no question the victim was shot.
By somebody.
Yes, he was shot by somebody.
Wasn't there a lot of testimony from other witnesses, though, independent of that exhibit to the video, that your client was the shooter?
Yes, there was.
The video wasn't the only thing that the jury had to consider.
No, but I think that helped bolster the credibility of these other witnesses that had credibility problems. Okay? Some of these other witnesses that testified were people who had disputes with Bordeaux, the shooter, the victim in this case, and family members of that person. So their, you know, the credibility of them gets bolstered by this video that says that, you know, my client is the shooter here. By they're able to identify him. Yeah, he was standing there.
Was there any claim here of self-defense?
No.
So the only real issue for the jury, because we know somebody who shot, is who shot him.
Correct.
Okay.
That was the issue for the jury. Who shot Mr. Bordeaux? The demonstrative evidence can't be changed. And when I was searching for cases on this, you found cases about slowing down videos, which are okay. But I couldn't find cases that addressed putting in identifiers in cases like this as to who the players are.
And if the video had been shown to the jury and the detective just simply went up and said, here's the video and here's who I think the shooter is, you see the arm, you see the whatever, would that have been improper too?
I don't know, because the detective never got up and testified to that.
That's the hypothetical question. Your concern is that there's labels on the video.
Right.
But what if there were no labels, but the detective simply got up and said, in my investigation, I have the video, because we have that happen all the time. We have experts or we have witnesses get up and point out parts of the video.
Well,
would that have been improper?
No, that wouldn't have been improper because he's testifying as to what he sees in the video.
So why is it any different that he's essentially putting it in the video?
Because by putting it into video, it makes it more real, one. Two, it's already pre-labeled for the, you know, predetermined in the evidence as to who is the players in this video.
So the jury wasn't given the... Was the jury told that they had to accept what the video label said, or was that part of the argument that this could be wrong?
That's part of the argument, but I think it invades the jury's province by telling them who the players are when they have to make that determination. That's the problem here, is the jury has to make a decision. Who is the shooter?
Well, the witnesses write on exhibits all the time.
Correct.
During their testimony. That's just, and here it's just electronically done. What in you say it's new technology, theory doesn't change.
But it does, because this, I don't have a witness writing on a statement or writing on an exhibit in the jury, in presence of the jury. This is done outside the presence of the jury. This is done in preparation of trial.
But the jury,
by the state.
But the jury was explained how it happened.
Sure.
The jury was told that it had been done this way.
Right. And the jury was also told by the forensic person from the Rapid City Police Department that thought the conclusion that could be drawn from under the video would be incorrect if the identifiers were not there. He testified to that on page 170 of the jury trial volume 1, lines 15 through 18. He said he thought the conclusion drawn would be wrong. That is for the jury to decide, not for law enforcement in a jury trial. That's why I think this is a problem.
Well, are you claiming that the police doctored this at all, or that they merely added these labels?
They added these labels to fit, you know, to after watching it based upon their conclusions.
Okay.
And I don't think their conclusions as to what's on the video should be put on the video. If they want to testify, I think this person's a shooter, that's one thing. But they're actually putting it in the video.
What you just said you thought was wrong, the testimony, I don't see that as an issue on appeal. Was there an objection to that?
Well, I think there was objections made to the video. There was motion in limine's made to keep out the video. And then I believe there was an objection made, a general objection made prior to the testimony of Mr. Stuckey based on the video. I'm not positive on that. I think it was preserved because the motion in limine was done.
You know, at the end of the day, did you argue that the shooter as depicted and identified on the video was incorrect, or did you argue that your client was not that person?
I was not trial counsel.
What did trial counsel do?
Well, trial counsel attempted to argue that the person in the video that they identified as the shooter was not the shooter. But the problem is you have it being being identified as the shooter there by the, you know, with the help aid of the identifier and the aid of people saying, oh yeah, that is Simon. So. Briefly, I'd like to move to a couple other issues that I had raised. The issue about the defendant being advised of the consequences in this case of the mandatory consecutive sentencing required for commission of a felony with a firearm. I understand that the court has said, the court has said, well, you know, if they plead not guilty, we'll rely on their attorney to say that. Tell them about that. The Miller case that came up before the court to address that was a little bit of an unusual case. And most of the cases deal with statutes that are, I'll call them habitual offender type statutes, in which it's an enhancement of the underlying crime. Whereas in this particular case, the legislature specifically said that they want this to be an enhancement of the underlying crime by an additional crime and making it a mandatory consecutive. The Miller case dealt with mandatory minimums, and he turned out not being really prejudiced by it because the trial judge didn't impose the mandatory minimum.
What's the prejudice here? Are you saying that your client would have not pled not guilty, would have not had a trial if the judge had warned him that there's a mandatory minimum sentence?
That's a possibility, Your Honor.
Is that in the record? I mean, is there?
It's not in the record.
So there's no testimony that, gee, if I had known that there was going to be a mandatory minimum, I would have accepted some plea bargain that would have offered me a way out of that?
There is no testimony in the record as to that.
Okay.
Now, that is a type of issue that you could see down the road in a habeas issue. And the question is, do you want to deal with that in a habeas issue, saying, my attorney never told me that, and I would have made a change, or would you rather nip that in the bud, not have a habeas issue, and just tell people, even if they plead not guilty, these are the consequences of what you're charged with.
It's hard to accept the idea that we would reverse this case, though, because he wasn't warned of this, when you can't show there's any prejudice, that he exercised every right he was entitled to, and so how, where's the prejudice?
The prejudice is, he just, even though he exercised every right he had, he probably, on the record, didn't have all the information in making those decisions.
All right, is there, the legislature hasn't made this a statutory obligation.
No, they haven't, but it's not their job.
And, all right, what's the constitutional, are you claiming it's a constitutional violation?
Yes, it's a procedural due process violation, that I believe that the court has the duty to help protect the citizens from what the legislature does or doesn't do, and telling them that...
Do you have any case authority that supports that failure to address this is a due process violation?
No, the one case we did have was overruled by the appellate court in Washington, so...
So you have no case to support
it? I have no cases
to support. So you want us to make the first case?
Yes,
which
sir.
We've done, but...
Yeah.
Okay.
That's... Yes. I mean, a lot of times the trial judges will do this anyway. They'll say, okay, no, this, you got a mandatory consecutive here or something like that. But I just think making a uniform rule that we do it in all cases, that we eliminate the questions down the road whether or not they were advised of this. I mean, it makes good judicial sense in that
certainly,
respect.
Certainly if he had pled guilty. And then when the judge gives him the mandatory minimum, you could say, well, now there's a real concern here. He pleads guilty, and he didn't know he was going to get a mandatory minimum. Thought maybe he'd have a chance at probation or something, but he didn't plead guilty.
Right. That would be a different case, and
right.
It would show a real prejudice there, so which I don't have here. I'm just, you know, it bothers me that... We're not telling everybody, we're not treating everybody the same. If you plead guilty, we'll treat you this way. If you plead not guilty, we're going to treat you this way. I think we need to treat them all the same at that initial proceedings.
Did your client raise any objection to the trial court about not having received that advice?
No.
Okay.
There was no motion for a new trial or anything like that after the sentencing?
Nothing like that was done.
You're saying it's plain error?
Yes.
Okay.
You know, you say you think they should all be treated the same. The question, though, is, does the Due Process Clause of the Constitution mandate that?
Yes.
That's the question.
I believe it does. I believe the Constitution treats everybody the same. I mean, we give the same rights advisement to somebody charged with a DUI, first offense, as we do with first-degree murder.
You have an alleged equal protection. You're saying due process.
Right. Well, I think due process involves being told what the consequences are of your what you're being charged with, and in that everybody should be treated the same in that respect. And I didn't look at it as an equal protection argument. I looked at it more as a procedural due process, that this is what we should be doing. Thank you. had also raised an issue about the photographs of the victim from the ER that were shown. I realize that the court has repeatedly said that you can do that, but I saw it as a cumulative type of prejudice that came in with you take into account the video of a person being shot, and then you have these pictures that they could have easily testified as to what the injuries were, and I don't think that the pictures were necessary in that case. So I would, that's why I raise it in that respect.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Lewis.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Ms. Meyer, you have 20 minutes, ma'am.
May it please the court, going back to the first issue where we're talking about abuse of discretion by Judge Trimble, our position is that Judge Trimble didn't abuse his discretion, that before trial he looked at this evidence and noticed that it's a quick burst, it's instantaneous on this tape. And so when Stuckey came in and explained that...
What's a quick burst?
The tape that you see in Exhibit 2. It's very quick on the cell phone, what we record, what the...
You mean the shooting has a quick burst?
It's a very quick burst. When you see, it's only 30 seconds when you see what happens outside of the Civic Center. And the judge saw what Stuckey had put together as a way to assist the jury and to give them an aid to sort out what was going on here. Now, if you take those labels and you throw them out, what are we left with? We are left with a victim with four bullet holes. We're left with two eyewitnesses, Little and Warbonnet, who say, I saw the defendant shoot the victim. And we have the defendant's own statements. We have his statements to his girlfriend, where he says that her mom is pressuring her. She asks him, what's going on? My mom is giving me grief. And the boyfriend tells Alicia Ross, I pulled it out and I shot him. It was obvious that the defendant had shot the victim. That's not coming from the labels. The labels are background as to what's going on at the shooting at the Civic Center.
Well, if it's so obvious, why'd you need the tape?
They put the tape in as background. It sets up what was going on. We've got a crowded situation. To pinpoint that the defendant is the one who's the shooter, we have the testimony at trial. And we also have the testimony of Little's girlfriend who says, this defendant bragged that he wouldn't get caught. And that's what links him to the crime.
Did the state use this on its case in chief or for impeachment?
The videotape?
Yeah.
It came in during Stuckey's direct testimony in the case in chief.
All right.
And there was an objection by the defense to Exhibit 2, my memory of the record. And the trial court overruled that objection. But nevertheless, we are in an age of technological advancement, just like DNA evidence. We've seen cases like this where we've had surveillance tapes in Krebs, we've had surveillance tapes in Berhanu. We're probably going to see more of them. But in this case, those labels on Exhibit 2 had no names, no inculpatory information. What we proved our case on was the statements and the eyewitness testimony at trial. Moving on to, I think the defendant took these issues out of order, but I'm going to go on to the second issue. The photographs of the victim's injuries weren't cumulative. We didn't have a videotape of the victim's actual injuries. Those were taken by one of the first responders, and they helped explain what the expert who was at the hospital helping this victim try to breathe and not bleed to death saw when they examined the victim. So they're not cumulative to anything. They show the actual wounds and the extent and the nature of the injury that this victim sustained. And they're very relevant to show what the defendant's intent was here. He never took his finger off the trigger. He never stopped shooting. He never, that's intent. That shows his premeditation. He tried to kill the victim. He didn't even know him, but he tried to kill him.
Did the person who was shot testify?
The victim testified, yes. Bordeaux?
Yeah.
He took the stand and testified, but he couldn't identify the shooter.
But he certainly testified he was shot.
He was able to say that he was shot in the head, and he was shot in the lungs, and he was shot somewhere in his body. But to get the precise knowledge as to where he was wounded, we see this all the time with autopsy photographs. These photographs were no more gruesome or horrible or any different, more cumulative than just putting in what the jury needed to know to determine how this victim had been injured. And it wasn't cumulative to anything else. Finally, with respect to the defendant's third issue, he misses the point. The indictment tells the defendant what crimes are specifically at issue here. The maximum sentence was 25 years for attempted murder, 15 for aggravated assault, and 25 for commission of a felony with a firearm. Judge Trimble went back and carefully said to counsel, is your client entering a nolo plea, or is he pleading guilty? And the answer was, that wasn't the case. They go on and they go to the arraignment, there's no objection. They go on, the defendant rolls the dice and goes to trial. And I'm outside my record, and I know Mr. Lewis was not counsel at trial, but there was a plea agreement offer in this case. The defendant turned it down. He wanted to roll the dice and go to trial. And he did. He goes all the way through trial. They're prepared at sentencing to argue for the minimum consecutive sentence. They use the words, the court imposes the maximum, and there's no objection, there's no motion to reconsider this. And now they're coming in on an end run on appeal and saying that we needed to know this. Everybody in South Dakota is presumed to know the law. And this defendant knew what he was up against. So if the court has any further questions.
You say the plea agreement was not in the record? Is that right?
No, it's not. I'm outside my record on that.
Okay.
Backing up the first issue, did the defendant testify?
Did the defendant testify and take the stand? No.
Okay.
No, he did not.
All right.
So, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Meyer. Mr. Lewis, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. I thought I'd have a few more minutes to look through that arraignment transcript.
You want her to talk for another 5 minutes?
Well, I don't know if she could.
I want to point out to the audience that the attorneys are allowed 20 minutes, but they don't have to use it. That's solely under their control. Sometimes they finish early. So go ahead, Mr. Lewis.
Thank you, Your Honor. When I'm looking back through this arraignment transcript, I don't see where it was asked if this was a guilty or a not guilty plea. It just was, here's the indictment, and, you know, advises him what the indictment is. He doesn't check to see if it's a guilty or not guilty plea in the arraignment transcript I have.
Okay, but that's not part of your appeal, correct? That there's no question that there's a not guilty plea, is there?
No. It just is. Just responding in rebuttal to Ms. Meyer saying that Judge Trimble said, is this a guilty or not guilty plea? That wasn't asked, and he went through and advised. He advised them everything except for the mandatory consecutive sentencing. In this particular case, the credibility of the other witnesses come into play. And when you have the video that has these identifiers in it, and then these people going, yeah, this person is Simon Torres. I mean, this war bonnet that testified, he also testified that he had gone to Flander Indian School and that he was hanging out with the Flander Indian School team. And the kid who took the video was from Flander Indian School, part of the basketball team. Joe Little, he was facing felony charges and got probation at about this time. So, you know, the credibility is of these witnesses saying, who are related, saying that this person I'm not related to is the shooter. And the girlfriend of Mr. Torres was actually she's the cousin of Warbonnet. If I remember correctly. but living in that same household. So this all becomes credibility issues that when you have the video with these identifiers in it, it helps enhance their credibility. Shane Bordeaux, who has testified, says, I don't know who shot me. I was shot. We don't dispute he was shot. We dispute who the shooter was. And in this particular case, the person being shot couldn't say who it was, or where they were, or what they were wearing. Just that he was shot. And you have the video now being played for the jury with the identifiers saying, this is the shooter, this is the victim, and then the other witnesses saying, well, yeah, this is him because he's standing there, rather than, letting the jury make up its mind without the identifiers. And this video, I think, was a key piece of evidence in this trial, in which it allowed the state to try to tie things together. And with those identifiers in it, that is how they were able to make everything tie together. And I believe that's prejudicial. My client was convicted after a jury trial. He was sentenced to 50 years in the state pen. There's not much more prejudice than that. So I would ask this court to reverse his conviction, remand for a new trial, order that this video with the identifiers not be used at a second trial in this matter.
Can the state use the video itself?
Sure, the video itself. I'm not complaining about the video itself, because the video itself is, I think, fair evidence to play. I'm complaining about a video that has identifiers placed by law enforcement in it to aid the jury, in the words of Mr. Stuckey, so they do not draw the wrong conclusion.
In its final argument to the jury, did the state dwell on the markers in the video much?
It was put in there. They did talk about it. It's a jury trial is like taking a test. You could know 90% of the course, but if you're tested over the 10% you don't know about, you don't do too well. A jury will focus in on. They may focus in on the 10% that's against you or the 90% that's for you, but a jury, they will focus on things, and I think in this case, they're focusing on that video and the use of that video with the identifiers to start, trying to believe people, what people were saying and where people were.
You're not objecting to the part of the video where they slowed it down?
No.
Right? Just the identifiers?
No. This court, I think, has held that those slowing down videos is fine, because it doesn't change the video. I'm saying the video is changed when you put identifiers in it.
Are you completed?
I'm completed.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. We'll be in recess until 11 o'clock.